Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
Wednesday, right? Wednesday.
Sounds right.
Yeah, it feels right. Paul Iander, Lindsey Brown, Playmakers on this Wednesday afternoon. Amazingly enough, we've made it through June. This is the last Wednesday of June.
It's June?
Yes, it is. It is June.
That's crazy. This month just went poof, poof, right on by. Flew on by just like all the airplanes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of the ones that are flying right now. Should be a few more.
There's more than there were a couple months ago, Paul.
Truth. Is there anything more depressing than going into your inbox and getting the little note from NV Energy, giving you your energy snapshot, realizing that you are only maybe 6 or 7 days into the billing cycle and you are set to spend yet another $200 on power this month?
There has been an increase in usage. I wonder why, Paul. Couldn't it be perhaps because it's 115 degrees outside right now in the last week of June?
The most sobering email that you get, honestly, besides the fact that you did not win a lottery in Nigeria and the prince of said country wants to split that money with you.
Yeah, all you gotta do is send your social security number, your address, and all of your routing numbers.
Yeah, that one I don't quite get.
No.
Coming up at 3:17, Sam and Ash will be stopping by and get into the legal side of sports, among other things.
Nice.
And plenty to talk about today on this Wednesday as we get moving down the road towards the start of the baseball season, and that's where we start our checkdown.
It's your daily checkdown, powered by Radio.com Sports. Number one.
Okay, as baseball gets ready for its return and starts laying out the path of returning.
The base path?
Yes, the base path.
Sorry, continue.
No, that could be it. I mean, that's pretty much the joke. I mean, really. I mean, you can't get any better than that.
Comedic gold. That's what you expect from me,
Paul? That's pretty much what it is.
That's what I deliver.
The base path to returning to baseball.
Mm-hmm. The home stretch.
Yeah, so 30 days away, they continue to lay out a bunch of things. But what's happening right now is that we're seeing more coronavirus-infected players, unfortunately. It's starting with the Toronto players, where they say multiple players as well. Also today, Colorado Rockies all-star outfielder Charlie Blackmon tested positive. The first player known to have tested positive. A lot of names have not come out. He's the first one to come out and say, yes, it was me. And the Phillies, the Philadelphia Phillies, shutting down part of their spring training facility. And because of Blackmon and the Rockies, they shut down Coors Field and had they're cleaning the whole place out. So it'll be unique to see how they get around the threat that lingers out there. And as they figure out how to put baseball's egg back together again after it fell off the wall.
Right.
They'll be dealing with this reality for sure.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. It has to be on the forefront of their mind, of all of our minds, that it can happen at any time. And, you know, if you're going to test, there are going to be positives. But as long as people are taking the necessary precautions, that's going to mitigate it as much as you humanly can.
Blue Jays shut down their spring training complex. It's the one thing that hasn't been worked out yet or hasn't been made public yet as baseball comes back is where will the Blue Jays play?
Right, because they were thinking Florida.
Yeah, they were thinking Florida, but they had to shut down that location. They have a AAA affiliate in Buffalo, New York, which would give them a stadium to be in, and it would deal with, that would take care of a lot of the travel issues because they would be playing AL East opponents. So you're talking about Boston and the Yankees. So at least in terms of travel, that would be close.
Right. And I think their Triple A team is actually in Vegas, Old Manchester, New Hampshire. So maybe that's an option as well, other than that, the New York option. But Florida, I feel like, is being crossed off a lot of lists right now. But, you know, we got a few weeks until the season starts. But as you said, it's one of those details we don't know yet. But we do know a hell of a lot more than we did a few days ago.
It's very true. As baseball gets back underway here in less than 30 days.
Number two.
Yeah, look at that.
Look at us go.
There are reports now how the NFL is going to allow local municipalities to determine how many people can get inside stadiums to watch games.
I feel like this is probably the way to go about it, right? Because every city is dealing with their own rate of COVID. And but then again, that's going to create a lot of discussion, a lot of things that could take a lot longer than it probably should. So I don't know. What do you think about
this? Well, there are some theories out there that it'll provide some home field advantage for certain teams in certain places to where if you could allow more people into the building. Because let's be honest, no one's traveling for the NFL as a fan this year. If you're not a season ticket holder, just based on what we know right now. Mm-hmm. Now, listen, I'm an optimist. I would love for 65,000 people to be inside Allegiant Stadium.
All of the people.
On September. But let's just be real for a second. So you're going to have to figure out how many you can get in the building. And in certain states, if you know you legitimately just don't have that heavy caseload and you've figured out how to mitigate things, you may be able to put more people inside. And think about it. In Dallas, Texas. Or in Texas, Jerry World seats 100,000.
Yep.
If he's got that capacity, there are very few stadiums that rival that stadium when it comes to attendance and capacity and suites.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be able to get more people in there just by way of just having the bigger capacity.
Right. And I want people in buildings too, Paul, but it seems like maybe this is a lot of work for a little bit of a sliver of making things a little more normal when it could actually open the league up and the players and all the people involved putting on the game for more risk. And so you want to minimize that as much as possible. So that's where I think we've been talking the last couple of weeks. We just, nobody goes in. Nobody goes in. Everybody watches from home. That way we don't have to choose. You don't have to find out all these rules. And we just deal with the problem that we have.
Well, they are going to minimize some of the risk initially. They're going to tarp off the first 6 to 8 rows of every stadium and sell it for ads. They would sell ad dollars. So if you've seen the Premier League soccer on television, where they've literally tarped off all the seats with sayings from the team, like, you know, good old glory for the queen.
Yes.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Correct.
Kick the ball hard. They're going to allow teams to make a little bit more money by selling the ad space and then provide more separation. If they do put fans in the stands, that the Lambeau Leap would literally be like jumping onto one of those big wet weenies things that you put in the lake, you jump on.
Yeah, the inflatables?
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
The Lambeau Leap would kind of necessarily not be leaping into fans. They would just be kind of leaping into tarp.
Seems like a pretty creative way to help alleviate some stuff around multiple ways, because like you said, added revenue back into the stream. You're making sure that you're getting ad dollars. I really hope that they open up like billboard style, just so maybe some randoms can put some crazy messages on there, but who knows?
It could be interesting, and they're going to be able to sell, like they do in college football, sell the field goal netting. So when they pull the field goals up, I mean, just it's built for targets. Let's just be honest.
Right.
I mean, Target should just be like, yes, that's us.
Yes. We shall be the target.
Yeah,
of the target.
I mean, we'll just buy that right now.
Yep.
I mean,
we'll send Bullseye down to christen it as well.
Right.
The dog.
Or literally anybody that sells tacos, that would be okay.
True.
I would be totally cool with that.
So many avenues.
Big
to explore.
Pictures of tacos.
Crunchwrap Supreme.
That would be sweet.
That would be sweet.
So that's part of the plan for the NFL, making some stadium changes, a little bit more tarps, which is going to reduce the number of seating, but they are going to allow a team to dictate stadium capacity based on local health rules. So, again, we might see people in the stands. Just how many is going to be the big question?
Yeah.
All right, moving on.
Number three.
So golf is going through the coronavirus issue as there are no fans at golf tournaments.
Mm-mm.
We've watched two on television in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, besides the charity events that happened before that, the PGA Tour is back in full force. But now we have players who have contracted the coronavirus as well as their caddies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's causing the players to step away as well.
Right.
So
you spend a lot of time with your caddy on
correct.
The course.
Correct. It's pretty much constant. So the tour has this bubble, so to speak, that apparently doesn't have quite the bubble as everybody thought it was going to be. Because, according to Golf Week, Koepka's team broke the bubble when his caddy went to the funeral of a close friend, and PGA Tour pro Graham McDowell and his caddy were at that funeral.
Well, unfortunate circumstances, obviously, for them to break the bubble, but that explains the exposure and explains if it's not as tightly watched as we assumed it would have been. It makes sense why you're having some positive cases and why you're seeing guys step away.
Koepka and his caddy played in a practice round with McDowell and his caddy. After the round, they found out that the caddy had tested positive.
Oh, man.
And then another guy goes, yeah, I got it too. And then because Brooks Koepka, which I completely forgot that his younger brother played on the tour, Chase.
Yeah, no idea
because
until today.
So Chase and Brooks have both withdrawn from the upcoming Travelers here, which starts tomorrow. So now we have multiple players, multiple caddies who are not playing, which is okay for the rest of them, but it just shows you
how easy it is,
how simple it is to burst the bubble.
Right.
It was very quick, and this all happened within the last 8 days.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and they're testing these guys a ton. They're traveling together, and that's what I mean. It's a little bit of a wake-up call for the PGA. They're still going to go on with the Travelers Championship this weekend, which is great, but it's a wake-up call, and it puts everybody's alarms a little bit higher and makes you think twice about some of the stuff you've been
doing.
You
can't control the things that other people do. You can only control yourself, and that's the case with Koepka. Koepka has his own chef that's traveling with him.
Mm-hmm.
He hired a chef.
Yeah. Exactly.
And he still had to withdraw because of who his playing partners were.
Yeah.
So
no one is safe.
Golf is dealing with I don't want to go that far. Okay, you're right. You're right. No one is safe. But let's say no one is safe is like, that's kind of a sirens and panicky.
I don't mean
kind
no
of.
One is safe in the bad way. I'm just saying make sure that you don't think that you're above, rules of law.
That seemed more measured.
Okay. Okay.
No one is safe feels like the movie The End of the World with like all those really weird comedians with, like Seth Rogen, where they're like getting high and Emma Watson showed up and beat them all up with the axe. That was kind of a no one is safe kind of moment.
Okay.
This feels
sorry,
like
I'll
a little,
tone it down.
This feels like a little more measured.
Anyway, you started the show with saying, you know what's really depressing? So I was just trying
it's
to
the
go
truth.
With that theme.
It's the truth. When you
but
get
it's okay.
That, when you get that Envy Energy email that says you still have to spend another $200 to keep your house cool at 78 degrees. 78 degrees.
Yeah. No one is safe from high energy bills in this valley. No one is safe.
Or Ryan Reeves if you're using too much water.
Yes.
All right, next.
Number four.
The USL, which is the second league below the MLS, has announced it's moving forward with the season. That involves your Las Vegas Lights. Yes, there will be actual soccer being played at Cashman Field in the next 3 weeks.
All of the lights.
Yes.
All of the lights.
Las Vegas Lights will be there. They announced today that there's 35 teams.
It's a great number of teams, Paul.
This is probably a nightmare ready to unravel. The regular season schedule will involve limiting travel because they're going to divide all the clubs into regionalized groups, which means that the Lights will play the Reno FC 1,800, whatever their stupid team name is.
Kind of what
is.
Baseball's doing.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. They're just going to play in regions. They're going to play 13 weeks of regular season games, and then they'll conclude and have a single elimination playoff at that point. So,
Net, let's go!
But they will be playing, and so they're going to have all the groups announced in the next 2 days. Today, they just revealed, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to start playing, and this will happen July the 11th, I believe, will be the first set of games. Yeah, exactly.
Right on.
It's right around the corner here, so Cashman Field, get ready. But no fans. Sorry. Groups A through D will be revealed tomorrow, starting at 9 a.m. The second set of groups will be revealed on Friday. And they'll have, a 16-game regular season. Some teams that already played games, so they're going to have shorter schedules to do. But
that's awesome, though. Anytime we can get the lights on the field here, that's a great thing. So I'm looking forward to learning all the groups and how they're going to put this on.
Yeah, so Las Vegas Lights getting back to the pitch. MLS announcing today, too, that it's got its tournament schedule put in place. They're going to start a couple of days ahead of the USL. So soccer in the U.S. Finally getting off the ground after we've been forced to watch so much German and British and, I mean, seriously,
yeah.
I think the Kazakhs were playing soccer on national TV a couple of days ago.
And now we have all of the lights.
It was weird.
All of the lights.
Next.
Number five.
All right, so the Hockey Hall of Famers were announced this afternoon.
Indeed.
This is something that Vegas Golden Knights fans can look forward to. It's one of those things. If you're a hockey fan, you understand what happened today. It's kind of like the NHL draft lottery. The Knights really haven't had a lot of say in that, so it kind of is really background noise.
Right.
But eventually, if the team is ever bad, you will pay a lot more attention to what's happening on Friday.
Yes.
But today is about honoring those who were just studs.
Greatness.
Back in the day. And it was quick picks for the Hockey Hall of Famers, led by Jerome Iginla.
Very deserving.
Marian Hossa as well, along with Kevin Lowe, Doug Wilson, along with three-time Stanley Cup winning GM Ken Holland and Canadian goalie Kim St. Pierre.
Yeah, three-time Olympic gold medalist and five-time IIHF World Championship champion.
Is she a friend of yours?
No, I wish, but she's one of the biggest names, obviously, in the goaltending world, and being the second woman in NHL history to play alongside NHL players. She spent some time with the Montreal Canadiens organization. Manon Raoum was the first. But yeah, very much deserving. Some big names are still left off that list, but for the most part, there's, just like any other sport, there's a lot of players that are very deserving to get in those Hall of Fames, but Jerome Iginla and Marian Hossa are the two names that really stick out to me in that highlighting class, and looking forward to seeing whatever what they're going to do for the ceremony and stuff this year.
Yeah, ceremony scheduled for middle of November, but, you know, they actually had to deliberate candidates virtually for the first time ever, so they got on a Zoom call and had their crazy backgrounds or whatever,
you know.
It's funny, the guy that made the calls literally looks like a caricature of a guy that you would expect to be making the Hall of Fame calls to people.
There's a mustache involved, isn't there?
It's this dude with the biggest, bushiest white mustache in the history of mustaches. No, there's not, but he's in a room with so much hand-carved mahogany wood, it is insane.
Right. Collared shirt, no tie or anything
else? No, he's got a tie.
He's got a tie on? Okay.
Yeah, it's
blazer?
Yeah, he's got a blazer.
Maroon?
No, it's a darker color.
Okay.
But, yeah.
I'm painting a picture. Theater of the mind,
yes,
Paul.
I'm making the call from the office.
Yes. I'm here to inform you of your selection.
So the Hockey Hall of Fame announced today, and the induction ceremony is coming in the middle of November. Golden Knights fans, you'll have to wait a little bit while longer for some of your favorites to get in, but guaranteed, some of your favorites will be a part of the Hockey Hall of Fame during your lifetime.
Oh, yes.
It will happen. Mm-hmm. We don't have to mention names. You kind of know where I'm going with that one.
Yes, exactly.
All right, there's your check down, powered by Radio.com Sports, your five biggest stories of the afternoon. Coming up next, the legal side of sports and just sports in general with our friends Sam and Ash. Coming up next.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul Lindsay on this Wednesday afternoon.
Hello.
To remind you, it's a Wednesday. We bring on Sam and Ash, who we have on the live line this afternoon. Sam, I know you're there. Sam, hi.
I am. Hi, guys. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, good to talk to you. Ash, you're back with us this week?
I'm back.
Yeah, welcome back. Blah, blah, blah.
Goodness.
Yeah, Sam goes, Ash isn't going to join us this week. We didn't even ask why. It was just kind of like we figured she was, you know, out trying to set some world records for ping pong ball bouncing off of mountains or something.
Yeah, where'd you go to unplug, Ash?
Oh, my gosh. So I was, both of my parents are from Pennsylvania, and my grandmother had a house out there, and so I had to go back for some family event. And I was in the middle of basically Amish country and no cell service and no internet, and it was nice.
Where in central PA?
Just outside of Harrisburg.
Oh, goodness gracious. So I have family that live there. So did you stop by the Pepperidge Farm Factory Outlet?
No,
see,
I know what you're talking about.
I know you do. Did you have some Scrappy while you were there?
No, but I had T-Berry ice cream.
There you go.
It's one of the legendary features of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say T-Berry?
Yeah, look it up, Lindsay.
Okay, I'll ask Mother Google right now.
Listen, see, if I would have known that, I would have sent you to a couple of my favorite spots, having spent some time in central PA. But you already kind of know, and Hershey Park was closed, so it's not like you could have lots of fun, to be honest. But you could have brought back, literally, some like really well-crafted furniture for us.
I could have in some of those fireplaces.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Sam and Ash joining us here, samandash.com. Join us every Wednesday. Hit them up on the phone. Is someone coming after you?
702.
Wow, that was a little weird. 702-820-1234. I'm just dropping the O's today.
Dropping the O's.
I'm just too lazy. Oh. Too lazy with the zeros. Just for you, Sam. Sam, are you excited? Wow. Are you excited? Are you excited? Baseball's back, Sam. I know you are. You've got to be.
Every day it's a changing situation. So what is it? 60 games? Yeah, I am excited. I'll believe it when I see it.
Well, it seems like it's pretty much a done deal, and it's good to see, because like you said, it's been a real slog. Every day you feel like it's a different update, but I know that a lot of the leagues are implementing those opt-out clauses in for some of those players that aren't feeling comfortable competing in their resumption of their seasons. Do you expect a lot of players to kind of hold out, or do you think that pretty much everyone is going to show up, at least in the baseball sense?
Right. Well, it's interesting because obviously some of them may use it as leverage. I think most people want to play, and they want to be out there, and they want to have a season, even though it might be a bit of an asterisk season. I just think the biggest X factor right now are all these rising cases, and whether it's hype or reality, time will tell. But it's just there is a concern right now that. You know, you're seeing what's going on the PGA Tour. You're seeing what's going on in the NBA. You know, players are testing positive. So I still think, even though they've come to an agreement, I think it's a fluid situation. And if a certain number of players were to opt out, then it's an even bigger, it's a double asterisk season, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Sam and Ash with us, samandash.com online, because you deserve what's right, and you need people that are on your side, especially if you're injured in an accident, and these guys will treat you like family for sure, as they are part of our family here on the Playmakers. Ash, first of all, welcome back again. Welcome back to you for a third and fourth time, as I'll say that, because you were definitely missed last week.
As
life moves forward, Lindsay mentioned, you know, the players opting out and things like that, and we see what's happening across the land with the tours and more restrictions that get put into place. How enforceable are a lot of these things? Since we last talked, and honestly, since we came onto the show, a number of large casino groups, including Caesars Entertainment, have said, hey, you can't come in with a mask. Is it enforceable? Is this the no shoes, no shirt, no service thing?
Yeah, it's private property. As long as it's private property, you get to make the rules on what determines entry. The critical thing is you just can't make certain protected groups abide by these rules and let other ones not. And so, yeah, as long as they're uniformly applied and it's just every person, no matter size, shape, color, et cetera, has to wear the mask, then, yeah, it's unenforceable on private property.
Well, and those are the big business type of protocols, and this kind of leads me into my next question here perfectly. I don't know if you guys saw what came out of UCLA last week, the football team, where they basically came together, a group of 30 players, and kind of unofficially unionized, and they cited that they a lack of trust in the program and the head coach Chip Kelly and their enforcement of the safety protocols and just the protocols that were being put in place for those players returning to campus to compete and to train. And so they want a third party health official to come in and oversee all football activities and all those protocols being put into place, as well as whistleblower protections. And I think this is a huge deal and a first of its kind. So I'll go to you, Sam, first. What's your read on this situation, and what's the impact of this type of decision or this type of grouping for this situation and then going forward in the grander scheme of collegiate athletics?
Right. I mean, it's interesting because I think this is kind of a first. I don't recall in anybody in the past ever organizing like this, or even if it's unofficial. You're not going to have a team. You're not going to have a game without the players. And it's not like these are players that don't take time to recruit and bring and attract to the school, right? So this is not like some position or a spot that you can easily fill with a replacement. So it puts a lot of power, I would think, in the hands of the players to dictate some policy changes. Now, Ashley, what do you think?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it's a recruiting tool. You know, you recruit the best talent and brightest students by your facilities and your leadership and your coaching. And if you can, as a university, demonstrate that your program, whether it's a science program, the medical program or the athletic program is doing top-notch efforts to maintain sanitary conditions and reduce COVID cases, you're going to attract top-level athletes, and you're going to end up drawing the talent. So this is an opportunity for some schools to, I think, win.
But what, okay, so I understand that, but in terms of who sets that standard, a CDC standard, a local standard, or whatever it is, because the top universities and the top schools, speaking specifically to college football, they have cases. LSU has cases. Texas has cases. Ohio State has cases. So regardless of best efforts, it's still, there is still an amount of inherent risk that has to be taken upon these student athletes
who aren't paid,
right? Who are not paid, that are still going to school. So, I mean, I see where you're coming from on that one, but regardless, if you're trying to do the best you can, and we've talked about inherent risk before, we've only talked about on the fan side, but in terms of players, they go back. I mean, the only guarantees that they have going in really are, hey, you're going to get an education, whether you have to sit in your dorm or not and take this class online, or you can actually go to a lab. That's pretty much entirely up to a local jurisdiction, not necessarily just us.
Well, okay, so the players, what they want beside the education, they also, I would imagine, they want to play. They want to have a season because that creates progress for them, which, you know, some of these players no doubt have professional aspirations, in the NFL. So I mean, I think that the players are motivated to have a season. At the same time, they don't want to get sick. So if the question is what they're doing, is it reasonable, or is it legal? I would say it comes back to what the school is doing. The school says, set certain guidelines. Let's say there's CDC guidelines at UCLA. It could be State of California Health Department guidelines, Los Angeles County guidelines. But really the only guarantee that you're not going to get sick is if you sit at home and order nothing from Amazon and order nothing from any outside and grow your own food. I mean, that is, you can seal yourself off from the world. And that's your only guarantee right now that you have no risk, you know, whatsoever of getting the virus.
Sam, I'm not mean to step on you here, yeah. But would you recommend that college athletes who are going to school, because I'm a great tennis player, and I say I catch coronavirus, and I'm like, you know what? I think I could have been the 40th ranked player in the world, which is a lot of money when it comes to tennis. Or say if it's a golfer, should these athletes, student athletes, men and women who are going to school, should they be thinking about taking out like policies against future earnings when they do go to school?
Oh, so interesting, like insurance.
Yeah, and a lot of athletes, you know, some athletes do have insurance policies. The schools, when you're in an athletic program, they provide health insurance. If you get injured while playing for the sport, it's usually covered under the athletic program's policy. But the reality here is if you look at the data that I've seen, these athletes are in peak physical condition, and they're the most likely to recover without any difficulties or issues. I mean, I've gone through two knee surgeries. I know, Lindsay, you've had some surgeries, and those are things like, sure, they're not a known risk like COVID is, but there's risks in sports, there's risks in college, and you're going to get sick. I know how many kids go to school and they get mono, I mean, right out of the gate. And
true.
So this is just one of these things where, look, your athletes are probably the best fit to recover. You look at the NBA players that all tested positive really early on. They said, I didn't feel a thing. I tested positive. I didn't feel a thing. I stayed home. I quarantined and all is good.
Yeah, but that's for me. I'm step by step with you there. But that's the difference between, you know, the collegiate athletes and then the professional athletes. The professional athletes have a union, have these parameters that are agreed upon, where there isn't a uniformity across the collegiate athletic landscape, or at least one that we haven't seen yet. And that's where it's very much a product of the moment. But I think it's very representative of just college athletes in general kind of feeling, oh, we do have a lot of agency here. We do have control over a lot more than we actually think, because this is also right. Riding on the coattails of certain states, including California, passing legislation about allowing them to make money off their likeness and to, you know, generate revenue.
Yeah, I mean, every athlete has to look at their own personal, financial, educational, athletic situation. And some might go, this is a great opportunity for me to sit out a season and develop my skills and not feel the consequence of a lost season. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And of course, the pendulum on leverage is changing. I mean, even with the recent legislation on getting paid. So I'm with you guys. It's going to be fascinating to see it play out.
Just Sam and Ash with us here, samandash.com. Join them online there because you deserve what's right. You can also give them a call because one of them will pick up the phone. This was guaranteed to us many weeks ago.
Yes.
702-820-1234. 702, for those of you looking for the O's, 820-1234. Guys, it's been wonderful to play catch-up with you. We're excited to have baseball back, as I can tell in your voices, that you're thrilled to see the return of live sports. Although, for me, it feels like it's been a void that I've been able to fill with other things, but I'm certainly looking forward to all of it coming back.
Same.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, plus you get to watch those swings that'll carry over to our golf games when we go on that top golf date that we're going to do pretty soon here. It's going to be just coming up spades for all of us here.
Hey, I was brushing up on my swing all week last week, hitting a couple golf balls in the backyard.
Excellent. We can make some money.
Thrown down, Lindsay.
Let's go.
Thrown down.
Sam and Ash here on this Wednesday. Thanks, guys, for hanging out with us.
Pleasure. Take
Bye.
Care. Have a good one.
SamandAsh.com. Visit them there online as well. Give them a call anytime if you need some help after an accident. 702. See, they hung up quick. 820-1234.
Someone was calling them. They have to get to the phone.
They clearly need to get to
Lions,
the phone.
Lions, baby! There.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Coming up next, the truth shall set you free. We'll explain.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Stick taps for Sam and Ash for hanging out with us today.
I left my hockey stick in the office. I'm sorry.
Mine is actually in my office, too. Amazingly enough, I have a hockey stick in my office as well.
Well, then, we can practice face-offs when the show's done.
We could.
We could, indeed.
Sort of. Yours is not a goalie stick. Yours is a legit.
Yeah. No, mine's a normal stick.
Okay.
I have goalie sticks, but that one's at my apartment.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to
bring
that
one's
one.
A little more of a weaponized version. You
gotcha.
Want to swing that thing around in
here. It's got some sharp edges on it.
I already almost put holes in the walls here a few weeks back. So the goalie stick, that's just too much power to be handled.
Right. Day. Understandable.
Mm-hmm.
So salmonash.com, that's where you can visit them. You know, Lindsay, you sent me this article earlier, and I thought it was amusing because I was like, I already read this article, and it was about the and I got it mistaken. There was the Athletic did a story with mascots and did a poll with the mascots.
Yes.
And I thought you sent me that one, and I was like, I really don't want to talk about what mascots think about
either.
Each other.
That's why I didn't send you that one.
It was
one.
The weirdest thing, and I was like, she really wants to talk about Chance and Bailey because everyone apparently hates Bailey and Gritty.
Really?
Like the LA Kings mascot, they think Bailey's lazy because it's basically its signature move is just kind of laying down.
Well,
like a cat that doesn't dance or anything like that.
Well, that's what I mean. That's a mascot thing. We're not
right,
here to discuss
right,
that.
But the social media.
Yeah.
But Bailey's great at social media, but then there's Gritty. And every mascot apparently thinks Gritty gets way too much like love because everybody does the same things Gritty does.
Well, that's the
thing.
It
just happens to be a Philadelphia thing.
Well, and he's the newest member of all the mascots. He was introduced just a couple of seasons ago. And you got to admit, they've pretty much owned NHL Twitter over the last couple of years
sure.
because of Gritty, because they just embraced the weirdness.
Yeah, anyway, when I thought you sent me that, I was like, really weird. But instead, we're a little bit talking more about the NHL return and the hub cities that are coming forward here. And there are still six in the running.
Mm-hmm.
According to Sportsnet, though, they're considering walking back a little bit from a couple of the bids, most specifically Las Vegas and Vancouver. Apparently,
allegedly,
the Canadian cities have all tweaked their bids in terms of trying to move forward and creating the Olympic Villages, which is no secret. That's been the big kind of master
the selling point for the Canadian cities.
Yeah, it's been it's been the point for them. Just like, listen, we can create these just lockdown zones. If you thought you could do bubbles in other sports and places, we can definitely do it here,
right?
And not have the problem doing it.
And the climate's a little more, you know,
true.
Chill.
But when the NHL does come back here and everybody starts figuring out who exactly is here, the NHL feels like this secret society of lower body injuries and upper body injuries. And it's always been this way forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, you know, they've been a little bit more forthcoming as they've revealed some of their plans. Again, we've seen this countdown of hub cities from 12 to 10 to 8 to 6 now. And legitimately just make it happen at this point.
Right.
You know, just make the call.
Yeah.
There's going to be two perfect answers when it comes to the hubs, But it's like the NHL didn't even come out and say what they're truly looking for, because
that's true.
Each one of these cities has their own unique quirks when it comes to that. And as they come back, you know, we start talking about coronavirus, which is totally a part
the reason
of,
for all of this.
It's totally why every league is adapting right now, you know, across the board. You know, the NFL was in a basement. The NBA is going to Orlando, and Major League Baseball just squandered monster opportunities this summer to be the only, you know, game in town.
Right.
But they're figuring it out, too, and golf's figuring it out. But the NHL, which has always been one of those leagues, actually the league, when you talk about injuries and things like that.
And transparency.
They've never been truly open about it. And at this point, it feels like they're going to have to be to regain some of the trust that's out there, not just among just us in the media, because really, who gives a darn about the media about this? But among its players that are returning, because it's going to always be in the back of their head. And it's something that I know that we as a public here in Southern Nevada, and those of you listening on the radio.com app, have been dealing with. It's like, do I have it? Did I have it?
Right. And is it right to release if someone does have it?
Right. And should I be telling the world that this person has this?
Right. And that's where we're kind of coming at this conversation from a hockey lens, from a hockey stance, but it applies to all of the sports, because we've had some players, their COVID-19 diagnoses becoming public without their permission. And the debate around HIPAA, the debate about whether or not that's ethical. And that's the thing, when you have a sport like hockey that is such a muddled ice or water type of sport in general, you're right. That trust with the players is so important, because it's not just about knowing who has it. It's about being like, do you truly have my back? Do you truly care about us as players? Are you really thinking about every single nuance to make sure we're safe and we're healthy, and that we're not just pawns in the larger scheme and the money-making machine that is their particular league? And that's where I have one foot on one side of the line and one foot on the other, because I feel like we should be talking about people who are diagnosed, because A, we should know that as because you have to figure out, have I crossed paths with them? That makes sense for them. But the larger stigma that is attached to COVID-19 or diagnoses like this, I think as you talk about it more, as you make it more real, it keeps that realness in the forefront of people's minds. And that's something that we really need as a society right now, because clearly, not just the athletes, but all of us have had kind of a relaxed stance over the last couple of weeks. And it's kind of roaring the ugly head of those practices.
The uncharted territory for leagues, and I've heard the rumors about this, and I hope it's just true, that they're going to have separate kind of injury designations or injury lists when it comes to, like, physical injury, like, you know, listen, I broke a toe, I'm going to sit out for a week or a couple of games or whatever. And then there'd be a secondary list where it would just literally just be medical considerations. And you wouldn't have to say COVID or coronavirus, but that's where they're going to have to be, because you're going to know, because everyone's going to wonder.
If they're not in the locker room.
Right, everyone's going to wonder why, and I'm just saying this just out loud because it's the first name that came to my head, that Max Pacioretty is sitting out for a game, and then he doesn't show up for the next game. And, you know, this is where the transparency with the NHL has been so muddled, like lower body injury, upper body injury. I'm like, legitimately, I'm like, just.
And that's a cultural thing, though, because when you just say that, you're not going to, they don't want to give out information because they say they want to protect the players, which is absolutely a consideration that needs to be at the forefront of all the minds. But when you have kind of that secretive culture, and this is what was outlined in the article from The Athletic that was written by Scott Burnside and Sean Shapiro that we're kind of referencing here, when you have that type of culture and you're not sharing the information, how can you expect all of your players to take your protocols, to take all these steps that you're trying to put in place seriously? Because you don't really take the designation series as it is before all this happened, and now you're asking people to not just meet a certain minimum standard but go extra lengths. And that's a really big kind of culture shock for probably some of these guys, and it's gonna, I think, create some hurdles that they're gonna have to deal with.
You can't lock down your social media forever. Your spouse, your significant other, they're going to say something. It's going to come out.
Right.
It will just be the leagues, for them to be honest about it and whatnot. And, I know we've talked about Ezekiel Elliott, too, which we didn't reach here. But that's one of the prime examples of it, where the agent came out and said, yes, Zeke tested positive.
After it was released.
Right. After it was released. And then, you know, just a handful of hours later, his mom comes out and says, yes, we were tested positive. I mean, it's not hard to connect the dots.
Right.
So don't make it hard to connect the dots right away.
I get the right to privacy.
Absolutely.
I get it.
Absolutely. But there, you know, to erase many of the questions, the truth shall set you free in
exactly.
this case.
Exactly. And it's just the more we try to hide it, that's just, it makes it harder for all of us to keep that you know, all alarms at the top going in our everyday lives. A lot of the mask wearing and the debate around that. It shouldn't be a debate, but that's where we are right now in this cycle. But when you don't take things seriously and you start to get a little relaxed, it just by in pure psychology, it makes sense where we are as a general public and as a sports just sphere. But you have to, the more you keep it in conversation, the more honest you are about it, the more serious people are going to take it in your league and in turn the public themselves. So it's kind of a public service in many ways as well.
Your daily pep talk is next.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul Lindsay on this Wednesday afternoon. Tony Cordasco joins us after the top of the hour, but now it is time for your daily pep talk.
It is time for daily pep talk, Paulito, and it comes to us from the Tube of You, a little bit of a cast of characters today, some that we are familiar with, some that we are not, but all about I can do it in that message. So let's run that tape, Marcus.
So many people out there fail, not because they don't have the ability. It's because they don't have the heart to go through adversity.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it.
You'll go through some failures.
When you're in that darkness, you want to sit there and wait for the light to come, but you can't wait. The only way out is to step forward, to face your fears, to become your own light. There's going to be a lot of times y'all about to fail. We are all a work in progress. But in that moment, I want you to remember the power of you. You will change the world.
Even when you're struggling, even when you're discouraged, and you feel like other people have given up on you, don't ever give up on yourself.
The indomitable will, if you have a belief, you can do something. The only way you grow that, like in the gym, you grow your muscles by actually exercising. To grow the individual will to become something, you must get comfortable with fear and failure. They must be your best friends. They're the only one that moves that needle of life. Every hero you guys had was called an idiot, crazy, a loser. You must break society's status quo. Status quo is normality. It's alive but not living. It's death on a stick, guys. The belief of the individual overrides thousands of people with just intent. Safety, comfort zones are dead zones. You have to continue to push yourself because your true potential will never be matched, guys.
Nobody is going to hit as hard as life, but it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you gotta be willing to take the hits.
The future rewards those who press on. With patient and firm determination, I'm gonna press on. I don't have time to feel sorry for myself. I don't have time to complain. I'm gonna press on. Stop complaining.
What's your why? What motivates you? What pushes you? What drives you? And if that thing is internal, if nobody has to call you, if nobody has to prod you, if nobody has to reward you, if nobody has to give you anything, if you are self-motivated and self-regulated, you can have it, you can be it, you can do it.
Take ownership. Take extreme ownership. Don't make excuses. Don't blame any other person or any other thing. Get control of your ego. Take ownership of everything in your world, the good and the bad. Take ownership of your mistakes. Take ownership of your shortfalls. Take ownership of your problems. And then take ownership of the solutions that will get those problems solved. Take ownership of your mission. Take ownership of your job, of your team, of your future, and take ownership of your life and lead to victory.
It's possible you can live your dream. It's necessary that you have a plan of action, that you're resilient, that you stick to, and you work with the system, that you have the vision and never give up, that you become creative and relentless and keep on coming back again and again and again, and that it's you that you got to take personal responsibility to make it happen, and that it's hard. Easy is not an option. And when life knocks you down, jump back up and
and said, it's not over until I win.
Pretending that crowd noise is for me.
Yes, obviously for us.
Enjoy that.
Right?
See, get you pumped up for an afternoon.
Personal responsibility, baby.
It helps.
It does help. It's a grind.
There is a story that has just come out that Major League Baseball has submitted a plan to play baseball in Toronto this year.
This calendar year?
Yes, which starts that little bit of a roll down the hill that if they're putting together plans for Toronto to play baseball there, that hockey could also be a possibility for Toronto.
Yes.
And that gives them a little bit more of a boost knowing that Major League Baseball is confident enough to play ball at Sky Dome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting wrinkle. Didn't think that was even being considered. Just, you know, from flying over and back from the border and having teams, you know, travel and whatnot. But hey, I'm not sure what the legislation is at this point. Things might have changed, but it's good news for Toronto.
There are a lot of private airports in the Toronto area, which would allow, you know, again, teams are going to charter everywhere. They're not, you know, they're not flying, you know, commercial.
Right. Toronto is the New York of Canada.
No, yeah, there is no C boarding group when it comes to flying professional teams around. But that is an interesting wrinkle, and of course, because they shut down their Florida spring training facility,
correct?
You know, it means they've got to go somewhere here in the next week. So it feels like. Toronto, basically the health doctors in Ontario, Canada, just have to check.
Yeah.
And if this is a thing, that gives the bid for the NHL's Toronto kind of hub city a little bit more of a boost,
well,
too.
Well, and if Major League Baseball is considering it, it's hard not to extrapolate that out a little bit more, being like,
right.
Florida. Interesting.
Right. A little twist there, a little wrinkle in the works here. 4 o'clock hour on the way, another hour of sports down the pike, and Tony Cordasco joining things, Playmakers here on this Wednesday afternoon.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
Greetings and salutations to each and every one of you out there. Welcome to the second hour of the Playmakers. It is 4 o'clock, 20 seconds past the top of that dot on June 24th of the year 2020. My name is Lindsay Brown. I am joined, as I always am, each and every day for the 4 o'clock hour, weekdays 3 to 5 in total, but by Uncle Tony Cordasco. Dasco, what is up, my dude?
So, Weezer, the rock band, right?
Very familiar.
So they just completed months of testing on laboratory rats, right? So they had
Weezer
pictures
did?
In this one story. Yeah, they had these pictures, one story that I read, of headphones, these little mini headphones on rats. And so they'd play music, their new music, you know, for the rats. And then the rats, they said, were lost early. And then they added some tweaks to the music, to the tracks, and now the rats were running around and they were happy.
They're vibing. Interesting.
Yeah, but, well, you see, I think, you know, like if they played Buddy Holly, I think that would make the rats move,
or
right?
Like My Name is Jonas, which you could just play on repeat. That is my
pork
favorite.
Pork and Beans.
Yeah, sure. The whole Blue Album.
Pork and
just
Beans.
Good stuff. Interesting that they chose
now they're going to start. Yeah. Now they're going to start on human testing. But animal activists aren't happy.
Right. Well, good stuff, Dasco.
approved by rats. Like they'll have like 5 rats, like 5 stars. Like,
sure.
What's the rating? How do you know the rating?
I would ask where you found this story, but I know exactly where you found this story. It's on social media where you tend to frequent. And that's why we give you a platform to start our show each day for our Don't At Me with Uncle Dasco portion here, where you get to shamelessly self-promote one of your own thoughts you've already put out on the social media ethernet. So what's your selection today, Dasky?
Never thought I'd miss 3:30 a.m. calls and texts to get people into nightclubs. At the height of the madness, I was sending 80-plus people through clubs a week.
Oh, my God. You're the gatekeeper of the clubs? Dasco, I didn't realize. Why didn't you tell me this before?
So people would be like, so-and-so told me to call you. It would be like, Sean the pilot. England.
Mm-hmm.
From England, okay?
From London.
British Airways pilot. He was notorious for the 3:30, 4 a.m. calls. We just got into Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here. All he had to do, I'm here with the flight attendants. Let's go out and rage.
Interesting.
Like what? I'm so disoriented.
Yeah.
And then I'd get them into the clubs, but most of the time, I quit asking who told you to call me or text me. I was done with it, and I just was like, okay. And then my buddies in the clubs, they'd be happy because they'd get people in, they'd reach their number, you know, on the guest list.
Sure.
And then they would also upsell them and sell them bottles.
Well, Dasko, you're a very popular man, and that's why you have your account and all of your 8-burner accounts. There's just too much Dasko to go around for one single profile, but I appreciate you sharing that little tidbit of information with us today for your Don't Act Me with Uncle Dasko portion of our segment here. And it's time for us to stick to sports, because that's what we're told to do. But as it's happened in front of us over these last couple months, the real world news is actually in the same reality, in the same world as the sports world. And that's why we're going to focus on the COVID today, but specifically about the COVID opt-outs that we've started to see from some players that we'll get into here. But Dasko, we as these leagues put out protocols for their return to play or the resumption of their seasons, you know, because we're dealing with a pandemic, which is obviously a huge health risk. Not everybody is a professional athlete. People have family members or may just not feel comfortable putting their future on the line in this current point in time. And then you also have a lot going on in the social justice world as well. But regardless, there is going to be a need for an opt-out clause for each league. And the NHL and the Players Association are still negotiating this, but the NBA has it in their plan. It's apparently in the Major League Baseball's return to play plan. And then for the NFL, who freaking knows at this point, Dasko? But I think we're probably going to see a lot more people and a lot bigger names than we probably would have previously thought, just because there are so many factors up in the air and that people have to consider for their own personal health and well-being and as well for their families, right?
Yeah. And, you know, we were texting back and forth. Avery Bradley, you know, opting out for the Lakers, started 44 games. And it looks like J.R. Smith will probably take his place. But this one makes a lot of sense, right? Because
yes.
Bradley wants to be with his family. He doesn't want to get sick, and he doesn't want to risk getting his family sick.
Right.
And he's got a 6-year-old son named Liam, who has a history of struggling to recover from respiratory illness.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't believe that his son would be cleared to enter the bubble. Plus, why put his son
right.
or anyone and his family at risk?
Exactly. And I'm 100% with you, Dasko. It makes total sense why he's choosing to opt out. And he's going to lose a projected $650,000 in salary by sitting out the season resignation.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a big part of that Lakers squad that is the number one overall seed in the Western Conference as we talk today. You know, he was averaging 8.6 points and 2.3 rebounds per game. Very much an active player and big tool for LeBron. And I know that LeBron has worked with J.R. Smith in the past for the good and the bad. But that's going to be a huge hole in that roster. And as I said, this is going to be a conversation we're going to have to get used to. And I want to make sure that we have the right mindset going into it, Dasko, because everybody's going to have their own reasons for doing it. But regardless, that's their choice.
You have to respect it.
You have to respect it because there's too much going on. And we don't know the full extent of what happens when if you come down with COVID-19. Some people are able to recover really quickly or they don't show any symptoms. But some people are having a lot of trouble recovering after the fact with their respiratory system, with lung capacity and stuff. Everybody's on an individual basis, and especially when you have Avery Bradley's situation, as you said, with his eldest son already being in kind of a compromised position, that's a no-brainer type of decision for me. Another example was Joe Kelly, who's a pitcher on the Los Angeles Dodgers. We're the home of Los Angeles Dodgers here on CBS Sports Radio 1140. He's going to play, but he talked a bit about how he grappled with that decision to play because he has an older son, a 4-year-old son with his wife, and they also have newborn twins. And as this was, you know, you have newborn twins as all of this is coming down. And he said, yeah, my wife even jokingly said, like, don't even play. Like, why would you even risk it? And the big thing for him that he said, I'll read his quote here. He goes, I feel morally right all the way up until that point, until someone on my team is like, bro, I'm playing, just play. You need to play on your contract, play. We're trying to win. That's the only thing that would be holding me back. Everything else, I would be fine with not playing. So he's saying that really the reason why he's pushing himself, that he's going to be participating, is because he wants to be there for his teammates. And there are going to be, there's that peer pressure. We've talked about that over the last couple of weeks, Dasko, about the mental health services that are going to be available to a lot of these players as they and the pro leagues, because you're dealing with all of this. You're dealing with the isolation and being away from home, and then you're dealing with the expectation of championship level performance. And that's a lot of pressure to put on people, and especially if you're on a team like the Los Angeles Dodgers that has a lot of talent. It is definitely like a year that is ripe for them to take. You know, if you have a bunch of your teammates saying, we're going to play, it's going to be really tough for these guys to say no.
Yeah, I mean, it's about camaraderie anyway, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's what they really enjoy about being a part of the team structure. If you're Ashley, right, Joe Kelly's wife, they mm-hmm. just welcomed twins, as you said. I'm sure she wants him at home, and she wants to make sure that they have a father, you know, down the road. You
right.
don't know. You just don't know. And to put that pressure on a player, I mean, the fact that he's even talking about it seems like he's on the fence. You know, he said that he felt morally obligated to play with his teammates mm-hmm. and to honor his contract. But other than that, he really could care less. He could care less.
Right. And he actually compared this to a situation that he has faced earlier in his career when he was in high school. He was really burnt out. He had gotten injured. And he was just kind of one of those kids at that time where you're pitching, you're training 6-7 days a week, and it just gets so monotonous. You get so bored of it. And when you get hurt, and he was like, I'm going to take a step away from baseball. I'm quitting. I'm going to go play football. And eventually he found his way back to the game. And obviously that's probably a good thing in terms of his long-term future. But this is someone that isn't the type where it's, I'm going to play every single out until they have to carry me off the field. Like, this is a guy that seems to understand the line between, you know, responsibilities with family, or at least just have the ability to weigh things out. It's not just if you said, well, your wife's in labor and you're it's game time. What do? Do you stay at the game, or do you go to your wife to the newborn? For me, Dasko, and I think it's an obvious answer, you go see your child be born. But that's what I mean. That's not the same for everyone. But it's he's someone that is already looking at this from a kind of a level headed view. But as you said, Dasko, there's so much pressure for the camaraderie to be there for your teammates, and because this is where the sports and how it's a game, it's a kid's game that you're doing at a professional level, and then it's a place of business, because you're like, well, am I really going to go push myself to go do this and get paid handsomely for it? But that's a huge, big-time risk. And as you were highlighting earlier, we're not really sure about what happens if you do get it. That's very much dependent on an individual health basis and when you do get infected, if you do.
And a lot of people that have been in great health have gotten it, contracted it, and have had a really big struggle, or, you know, they've died as a result of it.
Correct.
And so back to Avery Bradley, right?
Yeah.
And the NBA. It really, you know, this situation, I thought, was just the perfect example of why they should, and indeed they are, formally allowing players to opt out. I mean, he just said that basketball pays for his family.
Mm-hmm.
He said that he, you know, can't do anything to affect his family's health
mm-hmm.
and their well-being, and risk it even in the slightest. And so this is now, what, the third player in the NBA to opt out. So David Bertans, I know you guys were talking about him, and
mm-hmm.
he doesn't want to risk injury, re-injuring himself, a history of, what, 2 ACL injuries,
right?
A free agent.
And that's a whole nother consideration, too.
Yeah. Trevor Ariza, look at Ariza's case. Trevor Ariza of Portland, he wants to spend time with his 12-year-old son,
mm-hmm.
whose mother granted a one-month visitation period, which just so happens in the middle. It's been set up for a long time, but it happens, you know, while they're in the NBA bubble.
Right.
So he's like, I'm not going to play. It's more important for me to spend a month with my 12-year-old son and, you know, just be around him. So
right.
those are, they don't need doctor notes, you know, and excuses.
No, that's what being a human is.
But now we're going to be faced, right, Lindsay,
mm-hmm.
with some of the players who say, I just don't want to play. I don't feel, you know, hey, if they don't want to risk it, that's fine.
Right.
That's fine. And I don't believe anyone's going to hold that against them for saying they don't feel safe, or if they say that they feel at risk.
Right. And that's why it's important for the leagues and the players associations to make sure that they have those rules in place, not just where they're potentially losing their spot, but that you're not voiding the contracts, that you're not, because these are very legitimate reasons. And the reason we're talking about this is because, you know, it's our job to talk about sports. And a lot of us, it's easy to kind of say, well, you're getting paid so much money. Why? It's worth the risk. It's worth it. Well, we're all human beings, and it's there's a lot of humanizing elements that get kind of glossed over when you just see like so and so isn't going to go, or so and so test positive, or so, you know, that's the thing. We have to dig deeper and accept and be okay with this, because there is going to be a player that probably does opt out. I don't know what league or how big of a name, but they'll come out and say, I'm not willing to put my future on the line for this. I'm not willing to put myself in a pressure cooker in terms of having all this time off and then resuming. And as I said, going into championship caliber level play, like your body, this is going to be a big test for just your endurance as a body in general, not even talking about the virus, because a lot of these guys have never dealt with a schedule like this. And all of a sudden you're just, everything's going, and it doesn't take super long, Dasko, but you know, injuries happen when you're at the top level, when you're training every single day. And so there's a lot of risk that I feel gets kind of glossed over, in addition to the fact that the virus is out there.
And Avery Bradley, you know, just to continue on him, and he's still being productive and he's still being impactful, and he's going to what he said is he's going to focus on projects to strengthen his community. He's part of that coalition with Kyrie Irving, which has sought to have several issues covered, including racial equality at the restart of the NBA. So again, you know, like everything that Avery Bradley stands for, you have to appreciate it. You have to appreciate the fact that he says he wants to be with his teammates, but when you take a look at the big picture, why? He doesn't need to. $650,000 is an awful lot of loot, and perhaps, you know, the chance of being there to win a title, to win the ring.
They're the number one seed. They're on a pretty good crash course.
Yeah, so he's giving up a bunch. He's giving up a lot, but the safety of his family's paramount, and basketball is the game by which the means come for him to support his family. So that is like, it's just, he's done a terrific job in like laying that out, I think, for the naysayers, I don't know, for whomever.
Well, there's always going to be naysayers, and that's the thing, but that's where we have to do our due diligence as media members, and then as individuals when we're reading news, because you want to make sure that you have the right idea about people, that you do know the story, and that you're not just making assumptions, because everybody's going to have a reason. Whether or not you agree with it wholeheartedly is not really the debate. It's their body, it's their career, and their willingness to gamble on this and be a part of it, and it could pay off handsomely, but for some people that's just too much to ask. But Dasko, we had some big news come down the pipeline yesterday, and that's the restart, or at least the official news that baseball is coming back. So we're gonna, on the other side of the break, we're gonna break down what that's gonna look like, the number of games, what the playoffs are gonna be like. Well, we got all of that in a bag of sports on the other side of the break here on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Hour number two of the Playmakers underway here. Lindsey Brown and Tony Cordasco hanging with you guys here until 5. The NBA got their stuff together, Dasko. The NHL got their stuff together. The plans have been in place for a while. The NFL is basically business as usual until they give us further detail. But finally, after one of the longest and most annoying negotiations I think I've seen in the sports landscape in my lifetime, Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association finally figured it out late last night, Dasko. And first of all, on a scale of 1 to 10, How excited are you that baseball is indeed coming back this calendar year?
Right now, currently, very much lukewarm, 2 or 3.
Oh!
2 or 3. No, I'm not that excited. I mean, NBA's today, they said they're going to have games from the morning all day.
Uh-huh.
We're going to be able to watch hoops. And then NHL's coming back. There's going to be a lot of competition out there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm just right now, until I see them on the field, I'm still lukewarm. How about you on a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah, you know what, Dasko? Now that I think about it, I can't blame you for being a little apprehensive considering the negotiation process that's taken place over the last 3 months, which is basically just arguing about nothing. The cheating scandal that preceded the Rona with the Houston Astros and just overall the decline of baseball in general. Like, I get it, but I do think that because that they have been able to get their stuff together because they're going to be taking the field, that gives me a little bit more hope and just general humanity. The bar is real low right now, so I'm just like, yay, if they can figure things out, maybe all of us can as well, or maybe things are going to get better on the horizon, but we'll try to get
so
those.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, where are you at?
I'm at like a 5. I think I'm at a 5. Okay. A solid 5.
Do you think
5.
It'll, like, once they're back on the field, late July, then,
yes.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course, the scale will rise. I think so, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'll be met with some excitement.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, it's right around the corner, Dasko. And I to get the excitement going, at least for you, or get you to my level on a 5 instead of being a 2 or 3, why don't we run through some of the details that we know about the Major League Baseball plan to restart, and then we'll see where your enthusiasm level is from there. Does that sound good, Dasky?
That sounds good. One of the best features that I like is that there's no bat boys or bat girls. So imagine you break your bat and you have to go and pick it up yourself.
Yes. Skeleton crew.
I just love that.
Skeleton crew.
I just
crew.
Think that's going to be the best part of baseball. Why don't they allow bat flips?
I don't know. I have long been on the wagon.
Like the Korean baseball league?
Yeah, I've long been on the wagon for a little more personality display in baseball that doesn't include changing pitchers every other pitch. But before we get really deep into that, Dasko, let's get the main framework out here. There's going to be a 60-game schedule, proposed 60-game schedule. Players are going to report to their home cities on July 1st. They're going to have an abbreviated spring training, and I think somebody said this.
Summer training.
Somebody said this on Twitter last night, Dasko, and I think it's so perfect. He's like, who is the idiot that decided to go spring training 2.0 versus summer camp? Honestly, right. Every little bit helps when it comes to the Major League Baseball brand. But as I said, players are going to report, and that new abbreviated spring training is going to start July 3rd. Once the season gets underway, there, as I said, 60 games. You're going to have 40 divisional games. You're going to play each one of your divisional opponents 10 times. And then the remaining 20 games will be interleague with geographic counterparts. Well, Dasko, they can't be crisscross applesauce in the country. You just go with the teams that are closest
to
you.
Hate it. Just play, you know, games in your league and in your division and fight it out. AL East versus NL East. NL West versus NL East. Like, come on.
That's kind of what they're
American
doing.
American League
that's
West
kind of
against
what they're
NL
doing.
West. That's what they're doing.
That's what they're doing.
You know, there's only 60 games. Let everyone fight it out.
I know, but I don't want to. What if you're in one of those bottom feeders in a division and all of a sudden there's some life in you? Say you're like the Chicago White Sox or something, and the Minnesota Twins and the Cleveland Indians are both in your division. And all of a sudden, instead of having just 10 games, you have to play each of them, you know, 12. Those 4 games could end up mattering, and maybe those interleague games can kind of help you. I'm here for the change up a little bit. So because we're home of the Dodgers here at CBS Sports Radio, Dodgers are in that NL West division with the Colorado Rockies. San Diego Padres, the Diamondbacks, the Giants.
You want to see the Dodgers play the Angels.
Yeah. That. Well, those are your geographic counterparts with the AL West, with the Angels, the Athletics, the Mariners, the Rangers, and the Astros. So, yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense, a little bit of a change up and to make sure that you weren't just playing all divisional opponents. You want to make sure that there's some integrity to the season. But Dasko, the postseason is not going to change at all. It's going to be the same thing that it was since 2012. 5 playoff teams from each league make it. You have your 3 divisional winners and those 2 wild card winners. You have the play-in game for the wild card winners to basically decide who's going to face the divisional champions, and then the best
One
of
game.
5. Yep. Best of 5 series for the division series against the top division winner, and the league championship series and world series remain the best of 7. Any questions so far to ask you? We're doing a pretty good job.
No, it's okay. It's just okay. I'm still miffed about interleague play.
Okay.
And I don't like the runner on second base if you go into extras.
That's what I was going to go next, Dasko, because I'm actually here for this rule change, because I think the extra innings baseball, especially with how you're dealing with a condensed schedule, this is going to be paramount for them to complete games. And this is something that's been a rule in minor league baseball for a while. But every half inning after the 9th inning will begin with a runner on second base.
Hitty ball.
Yeah. The designated runner would be a player who made the final out in the prior half inning, or a pinch runner if you want to replace him. And the pitcher would not be charged with an earned run if the runner scores. But it's essentially it's a sudden death overtime incentive that if you're able to get a ground ball single that's going out, you know, to deep right center, maybe you get that RBI in and we finish that game instead of going 19 innings and all of a sudden it's 3 a.m. and guess what? You have to be back at the ballpark for your game that starts at 9 a.m. That's not going to work. It's not going to work, Dasko. But you don't like that rule, do you?
No.
Why?
I'm not a big fan of it. Just play it the way it's supposed to be played, intended to be played. And then I know that they were having a lot of pitching changes, right?
Yeah.
So now pitchers have to have a 3-batter minimum when they come in. I guess I'm okay with that.
Right.
I guess I'm okay.
Speed of play. Like I said, you don't want 8-hour baseball games, especially when you're dealing with a condensed schedule for this year. But you're absolutely right. There's going to be some big-time strategy and roster decisions that are going to be a lot different than what you're used to seeing when you're playing your full 162-game schedule, Dasko. But to ease players into competition, each club is going to have a 30-man roster for the first 2 weeks. Then they have to cut it down to 28 for the next two and 26 for the remainder of the season. Teams will submit lists of 60 players eligible to play in 2020, the 40-man roster plus a taxi squad of 20 players, where they're just going to basically have some players that are unsigned playing amongst each other while this is going on, in case somebody gets hurt, somebody tests positive, something happens, that you're not just saying, oh, so-and-so's at his place across the country and he hasn't gotten off the couch. They're actually going to have those players ready to go and ready to be signed if those squads need, which I think is a pretty good thing to include.
Yeah, well, especially since there's no minor league baseball.
Yeah,
so all these players are going to go to camp, right? And then hopefully they're able to keep them, you know, on that 60-player roster somehow, albeit even if it's on the taxi squad of 20 players.
Right. And there's obviously a lot of other details that it goes through. We're just kind of looking at Major League Baseball's facts here in terms of their restart of the season. That is going to – they're going to report back on July 1st. Their new spring training will start the 3rd, with the season itself beginning on July 23rd through 24th. And that entire season is going to run through September 27th and into the playoffs. So I said, it has not been changed to what you're used to for postseason baseball. So, Dasko, now that we've gone through some of the ins and outs here, what's your excitement level?
Two or three.
Well, darn it, Dasko. Know what I have to do? I have to incentivize this even more, Dasko. You're a tough man to please, and that's why I brought betting odds. I brought betting odds because those have been updated. To odds to win the 2020 World Series. I have the top 10 teams here, and it includes a few teams that we have an affinity for here, Dasko. So I figured it'd be a good way to include this, and I'm glad that I did, because you're still not excited about this. So the only way we can do this is get money involved. We'll get some itch for the scratch. The leader in the clubhouse right now in terms of what I found on Odd Shark for a team with the best odds to win the 2020 World Series is your very own Los Angeles Dodgers. As I said, we are the home of the Los Angeles Dodgers here at CBS Sports Radio. They are plus 325. Not really any surprises there, do you think, Dasko, in terms of them being the clubhouse favorite?
No, and the Yankees and Dodgers, their totals, you know, out of the 60-game schedule, they both have, it was just released this afternoon, over-under on wins.
Ooh.
For both of those teams, 38.5.
38.5.
Yeah.
Jeez. That's
for the Dodgers and the Yankees. That's pretty high. But after the Yankees beat up on all those saps, you know, from the National League East, like the Mets, then...
Well, that doesn't take very much, does it?
Pile up a lot of wins.
Yeah, okay.
Pile up a lot of wins there.
As I said, the Dodgers are the leaders in the clubhouse, but they are tied with the New York Yankees for that plus 325 odds to win the 2020 World Series. And in third place, which I am kind of surprised about, but it's mostly because I've written them off as a club and as a team and just as an entity in general, the Houston Astros at plus 750, their third favorites to win the 2020 World Series behind the Dodgers and Yankees. I'm kind of surprised about this, Dasko, as well, because I don't know if we're going to see nearly as much theatrics as we were predicting when we thought there was going to be a full-blown normal season before the Rona. But there are still some bills to be paid for the Houston Astros, at least on the ballpark, for their cheating scandal that preceded all of this craziness.
I think a lot of that probably, you'd have to guess, will be diminished.
Yeah.
You know?
Because you got to focus on winning games.
Right. Spring training, you know, they were plunking Astros batters at a record level.
Yep.
In fact, like, they had a total on the boards of like 57.5 or something like
that. Yeah, you could bet on
batters,
that.
Batters hit, you know, during the course of the season. And I'm like, the first month at this rate, it'll go flying over. Right. So I think I would have had some action on that. But I think, you know, with the coronavirus and everything else that's going on in the world, that's kind of taken a back seat.
Yeah.
Not to say that, you know, it's not going to be heated when teams play them.
No.
I just don't think they're going to intentionally, you know, be throwing at players. And did you see, so they have an operations manual in MLB of now 108 pages.
Oh, wow. 108,
and it says, you are not allowed to fight. That's one
you're
of
not
the
allowed. To, well, they're not even allowed to high-five each other. They're not supposed to be spitting in the dugouts or anything.
Five. Oh,
right.
Okay. So,
well, Dasko, no, hold on. We gotta finish out the odds here first, but go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No. Like, I mean, pitchers can't throw a spitball anymore. What is this game coming to?
I don't know, Dasko.
All you can have is a wet rag in your pocket. What would Burley Grimes say back in the 1930s?
I wouldn't knock this system too much because your team, as we already highlighted, the Yankees are currently tied for leaders in the clubhouse in odds to win the World Series. So don't knock the system that's enabling the greatness out of your hometown club, Dasko. Come on, we can't have it all.
What about where are the Nationals at?
Well, the Nationals are actually a couple spots down, but the top three, the Dodgers and Yankees, are both at +325, the Astros at +750, then the Braves at +1500, and then my Minnesota Twins at +1800, and they're tied with the Nationals, so they're between fifth and sixth place. But I was actually surprised. I thought the Nationals would be higher favorites just because I know that they're returning a lot from that roster, and you're just thinking, well, they won this last season because the season's gonna be weird, maybe it's gonna be an easier carryover for a title defense than it would be in other years. But still, they're still quite a ways way down on that list. But your Mets, follow them at +2000.
Other than listening to Weezer music today, I looked up the Nationals and where they were after 60 games last year.
Wasn't it crazy?
The record was 27-33.
Yeah, they were
which they
not
probably
good.
wouldn't make the playoffs, right? This year. You know, this season, the way that it's been.
Right, and that's what made their championship run so unlikely because they were kind of, they were in such a big
really
hole.
Poorly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so after 60 games, the Nationals were 27-33. And so the key here, fast start, obviously, and then to play consistent. And 60 games in 66 days. On paper, that sounds like a sprint, but that's grueling.
Yeah.
To only have 6 days off, right?
Yep. And that's what I mean. There's a lot of factors to consider, and that makes sense why they're having that kind of taxi group of players, of unsigned free agents, to play while the other teams are playing, because some of these guys aren't going to be able to go the full 60. Some of these guys are going to fall down due to injury because it's such a weird situation.
And, you know, another thing, too, I forgot to point out.
Of course.
You and I were talking about, you know, the stinkiness of not being able to shower.
Yeah.
So players can't come to the ballpark early. They must leave 90 minutes after the game. No showers. Shower back at the hotel. Then when they get to the hotel, they can't use the elevators.
Oh,
they have to use the stairs. They have to use the stairs. And so all of their hotel rooms will be on the lower levels.
Huh. Well, it's definitely a safety precaution there, and one that makes sense. As you said, it's going to be
It's 108 pages. It's right there in the operations.
Well, I'm sure the hotels that they'll be chilling in are probably pretty close to the ballparks nonetheless. But, yeah, as you said, there's a lot of things that these guys are going to be dealing with, including the disruption of routines. And we know how ingrained that is in the culture of baseball, many other sports as well, but especially in baseball. But as you said, Dasko, it's a big, hefty report. So if you want the grittiest details, you'll have to find those on your own. But we just wanted to run through some of the most pertinent information, at least according to us, Dasko. And even though you're only at a 2 or a 3 in terms of your excitement level, I think what we're talking about in the next segment will help pump up your tires a little bit, Dasko, because there's a Twitter poll, not really a poll, it's just kind of pick one of these four college quarterbacks who had the best season in the last decade. We'll broach that topic next, right here on the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
It's an argumentative Wednesday here on the Playmakers. Usually tends to happen when Tony Cordasco and myself, Lindsey Brown, are on the show with you guys
yes,
each and every
is.
Day. We're here 3 to 5 weekdays. And if you've missed any portion of our program today or any podcast like Saturday Sports Beat or The Nightcap, you can find all that in a bag of sports on the radio.com app that you already have downloaded to your phone. But if you haven't, it's in the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. Once you download that thing, search out CBS Sports Radio 1140 within the radio.com app and make sure you hit the heart and share and care and send our sports knowledge and content to everyone that you may have met, even just for 10 seconds at that gas station one time to ask, because everybody needs sports knowledge and everybody likes to debate things. And that's what you and I are going to get into next here, because earlier this morning, Dasko, the Pro Football Focus College Twitter handle at PFF underscore college tweeted out a little bit of a detention thing. It's all about the best college quarterback of the decade, and they provided us four names and four pictures. They are Cam Newton when he was playing for Auburn, Johnny Manziel when he was playing for Texas A&M, Marcus Mariota, now member of the Las Vegas Raiders but formerly of the Oregon Ducks, and Joe Burrow of LSU, the best college quarterback of the decade. Dasko, we might as well debate this, because honestly, this is a really tough choice, and I don't even know if these are the best four options.
Man, you know, I'm not going off of recency bias, but Joe Burrow, I mean, just head and shoulders better than anyone else that played in the last decade. Greatest season ever by a college quarterback. 76% of his passes were completions.
That's good.
76%.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. That's unheard of.
That's crazy.
60 touchdowns, six interceptions his senior year. And people are like, oh, he's a one-hit wonder. He only had one good season. But what a season that was.
True.
And as we know, right, he started as a backup at Ohio State,
mm-hmm.
and then transferred to LSU, where he won the national championship last year.
Right.
And to me, here is a quarterback on an upward swing. I mean, when you look at it, like, he started off slow, backup at Ohio State, and every year he's just gotten progressively better, more repetitions, and then he was just the coolest customer I've ever seen.
Right.
I was going to say under center, but
yeah,
in the shotgun.
No, the stats are gaudy. And just to put it in perspective for people in terms of how unheard of, especially his completion percentages, as you said, Dasko, 76%.
76%.
In terms of the other players that we're debating here, other college quarterbacks of the decade, Marcus Mariota and Johnny Manziel are the closest with 68% completion rates when they had their best seasons at their respective universities. And then Cam Newton had 66%. And as you know, those are small percentage points on there, but that just shows you how big of a jump. That's a whole 10 point. That's crazy. That is true differentiating data right there. And it's tough to argue about Joe Burrow probably being the headline of this class. And yeah, there's probably some recency bias, but I don't even think that Johnny Manziel should be considered in this group. Like, I get it. He won the 2012 Heisman. They had that crazy season in 2012 where they beat Alabama. They ended up going to the Cotton Bowl and winning over Oklahoma. He had 26 touchdowns with his through the air and 21 rush. And I think that's the thing about Johnny, because he was very much kind of a flashpoint of that dual threat quarterback, that next iteration past RG3, and obviously with the personality and all the other things that kind of packaged him where he ended up going, you know, 22nd overall to Cleveland in 2014. He's now out of the league and out of the Canadian Football League as well. But as great as that year was, I don't think he's up there in terms of Cam Newton or Marcus Mariota, because he didn't even sniff the national championship
but he should be in the equation. 3,000 yards passing, 1,000 yards rushing in a season,
mm-hmm.
and one of just five players, you know, to do that.
Right.
And the first freshman to win the Heisman, the Manning Award, and the Davey O'Brien Award.
Right.
So yeah, he deserves some consideration. You know, that was like a run and shoot offense.
Yes.
And maybe it was the air raid right under
Kevin
Sumlin.
Well, it was kind of out of nowhere too. And he was, as you said, he was so young. And then maybe the fact that he did win that Heisman his freshman year and then had a pretty strong campaign his sophomore year, but it wasn't nearly to the level. I'm sure that's been dampened a little bit. And obviously what's transpired since then probably has changed a little bit of the outlook on Johnny. But in terms of of Marcus Mariota and Cam Newton. You know, both of those guys are, Cam Newton was a number one overall pick in 2010. You have Marcus number two overall in 2015. Both made it to a national championship game. Cam Newton was able to seal the deal. Both have Heismans. But in terms of the names that were left off of this list, Dasko, you have Baker Mayfield, who won it in 2017. You have Kyler Murray, who won it in 2018. Lamar Jackson in 2016. Jameis Winston in 2013. RG3 in 2011. And I think if I had to pick someone who wasn't on the on these top four quarterbacks, I think it's Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson, to be totally honest.
And yeah, maybe we're taking a little bit of the NFL success and bring that forward. But still, I remember that year and how crazy that year was for him when he won that Heisman Trophy in 2016. Mm-hmm. And he then did kind of what Johnny did, where he returned to school again the year following, and then was drafted at the back end of the first round by the Baltimore Ravens. But I think he deserves to be in that top four more than Johnny Manziel does.
Yeah, and the first player this year to physically run into a jet ski. Lamar Jackson, like everyone, I just liked how he proved so many people wrong, and they right. just were like, he's not going to be good on the next level. He's one-dimensional. He can only run.
Well, especially but coming from a say, program like Louisville, Dasko, too.
Oh, man, I say he's got a gun. I think his arm is underrated.
Mm-hmm.
But out of those four quarterbacks,
mm-hmm.
let's do this. Let's rank them 1 through 4.
Okay.
That you mentioned. So Burrow, Newton, Manziel, and Mariota. How would you rank them?
Well, I think you and I both kind of agreed on Joe Burrow probably being the number one, and I'm going to put Johnny Manziel in the four. So it's really the question of who's second place here. And mm-hmm. God, I want to say Marcus, but I think it's Cam. I think it's Cam for me for that second best college football quarterback of the decade, just because that was also a really kind of crazy flash in the pan team. But I remember the Iron Bowl and how crazy that kind of swung everything in their favor as they were going into the playoffs. This is before the college football playoff. It was the kind of the BCS. But he as an athlete was just so dominant and head and shoulders above so many, even the best of the best. And so that's where I think he's behind Joe Burrow. And Joe Burrow is only at one because, as you said earlier, Dasko, how do you argue with the season he had last season?
Yeah, and I have it ranked the same way. And it was difficult for me between Newton and Mariota. Newton, now the big secret came out this week that he has 9 kids, which is insane. Anyway, but he started his career under Tim Tebow at Florida, got in trouble at the University of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't remember, but he went to Blinn Junior College, I think,
yeah.
in Texas.
Yep.
And in 2009, he won the JUCO National Championship. And then he came back and won the NCAA championship,
right.
the title, and the Heisman the following year.
And if let's not forget, Dasko, of all the allegations that were surrounding him and his dad, Cecil, as well, over the course of that season, because he was almost mm-hmm. ruled ineligible. We forget about
yeah.
that, too.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And then Mariota might be the best number three in the history
right?
of college football. I mean, again, he threw for over 10,000 yards.
Mm-hmm.
He threw for 40 touchdowns in 2014. He wins the Heisman. He finished, they finished second in the nation, Oregon, in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost in a national championship game to Ohio State in 2015.
Right, which was the first iteration of the college football, at least where you had a semifinal and then a final game.
Yeah, it was no longer the mythical national championship.
Right. And OSU, I think, it was kind of out of the blue, too, because I think they played Alabama in that first semifinal, and Alabama was big-time favorites, and OSU just kind of walked out, stomped all over them, and then just, you know, it was kind of like 1980 Miracle on Ice. You had your big championship game before the championship game.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. No doubt.
Yeah, it's a weird debate, and there's a lot of great quarterbacks that have existed that have played in the college football landscape over the last decade. But I think Joe Burrow reigns supreme. But Dasko, we want to send everyone out with some good vibes, some good feelings. So let's do our cheers segment where we bring out a story that is about someone or something that is good and bright. So we raise our metaphorical tall, small, lit and bitten glasses to those people and those good stories. So who are you going to be cheersing today, Dasky?
I am going to cheers one of Cam Newton's former teammates, Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey, stud on and off the field, and he launched something called 22 Together, an initiative with his teammate Shaq Thompson to unite the Charlotte community through sports programs for underserved youth. 22 Together will launch with football, flag football, and cheerleading, and it'll be free of charge for children in those communities. And then previously, you may remember, back in May, McCaffrey started something called 22andYou, and that supported frontline healthcare workers in the Carolinas during the pandemic. And with a matter of days, 22andYou raised hundreds of thousands of dollars in relief for frontline healthcare workers. So
that's amazing.
He's doing yeoman work, and we got to give Christian McCaffrey a shout out.
Oh, absolutely. Talk about a guy with a really big future and obviously has his priorities straight and is helping out in every way that he can. Cheers to Christian McCaffrey. Mine's Corona related as well. As we know, the pandemic has been especially hard on elderly. People have been advised strictly to adhere to stay-at-home orders and social distancing guidelines. And obviously, it's a pandemic, so it's across the world. So our story is coming out of the country of Brazil, which has definitely seen some crazy numbers in terms of the corona. But for 28 seniors that were living in isolation since March 17th at this senior living home in Rio Grande in Sul in Brazil, Mother's Day came and went without any visitors, and obviously morale was at a pretty low point. So to help combat that and to get some social interaction to make sure that the elderly population is feeling love, and that specifically this group home here, they put together and created a hug tunnel, Dasco, that's made of thick plastic sheeting that has armholes for visitors and residents to wrap their arms around the person standing on the other side. So there's a lot of pictures of people embracing, I'm assuming, their children, their loved ones, even their spouses that haven't been able to do so in a number of months. And as I said, the pandemic has affected all of us in innumerable ways. It's been a crazy thing, but I think our elderly population has probably been one of the worst hit, and any sort of warmth or connection is so important. So I want to cheers this home in Brazil for getting creative and finding a way, to spread the love and spread the cheer with their residents.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Really nice.
Lots of good stuff today, Dasco. Lots of good stuff.
Fun show.
I know,
fun
as show. Always. So, Dasco, we don't have a ton of time left, but what are you watching these days? Is The Bachelor still going on, or is it just started?
That's on Mondays.
Oh, that's on Mondays. I'm sorry.
It's like the best. It's the GOAT session of The Bachelor. The greatest of all time.
The greatest
Bachelors.
Of all time. Well,
no
Monday
TV
night.
Tonight, blackout. I got to do some work.
Okay, Dasco. Will you get after
I
that
gotta
work?
I got to listen to Weezer.
Okay.
I got to listen to
You listen to Weezer. I'll be chilling at home, and we'll see everybody back here tomorrow, 3 to 5 weekdays. Thank you to you, Dasco. Thank you to Marcus. Thanks to Paul. And thank you to you guys for sticking around. Until we see you guys again, be well, be safe, and wear your damn masks. Bye!
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.